following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome to a Thursday. What was it Anthony Scaramucci said? Something about fish stinking from the head down or something. This White House is full of liars. How did Al Franken put it? Lying liars and the liars who lied or something. When I'm not here doing the show, trying to regurgitate all the information I've soaked in, I'm trying to soak in the information. I'm reading whatever I can, whatever catches my eye on the internet. I'm watching TV, flipping around between so-called news channels, trying to find actual news. You know, everything is breaking news, even when it's not really breaking news. But, you hear the breaking news sounder and you think, okay, what now? Because it seems like every day there is something. Yesterday was interesting, though, because it seemed like no matter where I went, they were all talking about the lies emanating from the White House.
Donald Trump for years has had a casual relationship with the truth, but he's president now. Is basic truth-telling too much to ask?
Good question. Is basic truth-telling too much to ask? Here was a panel on CNN.
When do you believe what the president says?
At this time, I don't think he can. And I do think that the credibility problem is much bigger than telling fibs or white lies. You're talking about world leaders who are looking inward at the United States when you're talking about trade deals or NATO or dealing with Russia or North Korea, whatever they may be, Iran, Iraq. The fact of the matter is, if these world leaders are watching these lies take place now, over these little minuscule things in mm-hmm. some ways, they have to start to wonder, is he going to lie to us on the bigger issues?
So my question always with him is he lying or does he have a distorted reality and he believes these things are happening? And so maybe somebody else said this and then he transposes it into that this was said to him. I had this experience when I interviewed him and had written some things that he said to me multiple times on tape and then complained to somebody and said, why did she say that I said that? I never said that. And it was on tape two times, but it wasn't like he was angry. He was mystified, right? It was sort of like he didn't really have a memory of saying it. So I've always wondered, like, where this comes from. Does he know that he's lying, or is he just believe that these things happened? I don't, because it does seem strange. It's so easily verifiable.
It is. But you know what? I used to work with somebody like that. He was a pathological liar. I would sit and listen to him spout this stuff that I knew to be bold-faced lies. And I would finally got to the point where I thought he actually believes what he's saying. He's said these things so many times that he believes what he's saying. But in the case of Donald Trump, it's not that he's repeating things. Well, he does repeat things ad nauseum. He repeats things, but new things each day. It's like every time he opens his mouth, there's a lie. This from not last night, but the night before. And I think it's what prompted all of the outrage and all the lies, two seemingly little insignificant lies that came from the White House that just shouldn't have happened.
Pushing back against the president tonight and a claim he made to the Wall Street Journal. According to a transcript of an interview with the Journal and obtained tonight by Politico, the president denies there is any mixed reaction to the controversial Boy Scout speech that he gave. And the president in the interview said, quote, they loved it. There was some laughter in the exchange. He said it wasn't. It was no mix. That was a standing ovation. And I got a call from the head of the Boy Scouts saying it was the greatest speech that was ever made to them. Aye. And they were very thankful. So there was no mix.
There was no call.
Okay, well, it appears someone is not being fully honest here, because a Boy Scouts official, of course, apologized to the scouting community for the political rhetoric in Trump's speech.
Yeah.
And moments ago, the Boy Scouts told Outfront, issuing this to our show, saying the chief scout executive's message to the scouting community speaks for itself. They are sticking with their criticism of the political rhetoric.
As they should. And it wasn't only the lie about, you know, the Boy Scouts called him and told him it was the best speech in the history of speeches to the Boy Scouts. He also lied about the president of Mexico ostensibly calling him. And it prompted Chuck Todd, of whom I'm not, you know, the biggest fan in the world, to go somewhat ballistic yesterday.
Well, so it's one thing to evade. That's common in politics. But it's another when you mislead and get caught. And it's a whole nother animal if you flat out lie.
Do you see any circumstances where it's appropriate to lie from the podium?
Absolutely not. I don't think it's appropriate to lie from the podium or any other place.
And it's a question that had to be asked today of this White House. But to cover this White House over the past few days, it has been a mind-numbing combination of shocking, frustrating, and depressing. Because as bad as we thought the credibility crisis was, it's gotten much worse. They've compounded misleading statements with misleading statements about those misleading statements.
Wow.
They've been caught in blatant contradictions and petty fabrications. If they're going to potentially mislead us about everything from crowd sizes to campaign meetings to what was said at the Boy Scouts, throw out wildly unsubstantiated claims like Obama wiretapped my phones and 3 million illegal immigrants voted only for Hillary Clinton, and then blast reporters for so-called fake news when they're called out on this nonsense, why should we or the public or Congress or the world take them at their word at anything?
You shouldn't. That's the thing. You can't believe a word they say. And, you know, the wall that Donald Trump has been screaming about for 2 years now, or going on three, you know, the wall that he was going to build and Mexico was going to pay for, it's all a lie. He knows it's a lie. And we know this because here was today's big breaking news story. Breaking news, the Washington Post got a hold of the transcripts of two phone calls that Donald Trump made to world leaders, the president of Mexico and the prime minister of Australia, in the first week of his presidency. We remembered hearing about it. We remembered hearing that the call with the prime minister of Australia, Turnbull, didn't go that well, that it was contentious. It was actually quite contentious. And in fact, there's I was going to print out the transcripts until I realized it was 53 pages worth of transcripts. And then I said, nope. So I went through some of it. And, you know, well, the lies to the prime minister of Australia was about immigration. And it was just an ugly phone call. You can read it. I'll post the link on my blog at NicoleSandler.com after the show, where I post the podcast of the program, to the Washington Post article that has the transcripts. You can read them for yourself. But I did pull the text of some of the call to Enrique Peña Nieto, the president of Mexico. And just little things about it are so disconcerting. Throughout the whole thing, he keeps referring, the Peña Nieto refers to Donald Trump as Mr. President. Donald Trump refers to Peña Nieto as Enrique. Throughout, Enrique, like he's talking to, you know, the lawn boy. I got to tell you. But so there's a lot of stuff that some of it makes no sense at all. Some of it you can just tell Trump is in way over his head. He has no idea what he's talking about. But then they get to the wall. And I've got a lot here, but you're only hearing little bits and pieces in the media. Let me share with you a good chunk of it. Obviously not the whole thing, but to hear how this man's brain works and know that he's been lying not only to you, but his poor, impressionable followers who believed him when he said, we're going to build a wall, and who's going to pay for it? Mexico! Who's going to pay for it? Mexico! You know, because this is what he loves, or these pep rallies. He's got another one today in West Virginia because they love their Trump in West Virginia. So, to President Peña Nieto, Trump says, the only thing I will ask you, though, is on the wall. You and I both have a political problem. My people stand up and say, Mexico will pay for the wall. And your people probably say something in a similar but slightly different language. But the fact is, we are both in a little bit of a political bind because I have to have Mexico pay for the wall. I have to. I've been talking about it for a 2-year period. And the reason I say they're going to pay for the wall is because Mexico has made a fortune out of the stupidity of U.S. trade representatives. They're beating us at trade and they're beating us at the border and they're killing us with drugs. And it goes on and on and on. And then he says, so what I would like to recommend is if we're going to have continued dialogue, there's one of his threats, we will work out the wall. They're going to say, who's going to pay for the wall, Mr. President, to both of us? And we should both say, we will work it out. It will work out in the formula somehow, as opposed to you saying, we will not pay, and me saying, we will not pay. Because you and I are both at a point now where we're both saying, we are not to pay for the wall. From a political standpoint, that is what we will say. He's colluding with him on how to lie to not only the American people, but the Mexican people about this stupid fucking goddamn wall that never should be built, never hopefully will be built. Back to Trump. He says, we cannot say that anymore, because if you're going to say that Mexico is not going to pay for the wall, then I do not want to meet with you guys anymore because I can't live with that. Yes, that's a direct quote from the President of the United States. If you are going to say that Mexico is not going to pay for the wall, then I do not want to meet with you guys anymore because I cannot live with that. I'm willing to say that we will work it out, but that means it will come out in the wash, and that is okay. He's the biggest bullshitter, right? But you cannot say anymore that the United States is going to pay for the wall. I am just going to say that we are working it out. Believe it or not, Trump continued, this is the least important thing that we're talking about. But politically, this might be the most important thing we talk about. But in terms of dollars or pesos, he actually said, it is the least important thing. I know how to build very inexpensively, so it will be much lower than these numbers I am being presented with, and it will be a better wall, and it will look nice, and it will do the job. Peña Nieto then says, you have a very big mark on our back, Mr. President, regarding who pays for the wall. This is what I suggest, Mr. President. Let us stop talking about the wall. I have recognized the right of any government to protect its borders as it deems necessary and convenient, but my position has been and will continue to be very firm, saying that Mexico cannot pay for that wall. And then Trump says, but you cannot say that to the press. The press is going to go with that, and I cannot live with that. You cannot say that to the press because I cannot negotiate under those circumstances. This is how he negotiates. He berates and belittles and yells at people. Peña Nieto then says, I understand you well, Mr. President. I understand this critical point, and I understand the critical political position that this constitutes for your country and for you, Mr. President. You see, he keeps calling him Mr. President. Let us look for a creative way to jump over this obstacle. It does not mean that this is not an important issue. This is an important issue. However, this is why we should walk on the path that we began, because when we start talking about the wall, it prevents us from talking about other important issues that we must discuss. And here's the really important point from Enrique Peña Nieto. He said, I clearly understand what this issue constitutes for you in the United States. And for Mexico, it is also an issue that goes beyond the economic situation, because this is an issue related to the dignity of Mexico and goes to the national pride of my country. Let us, for now, stop talking about the wall. Let us look for a creative way to solve this issue, for this to serve both your government, my government, and both our societies. Let us leave this topic, let us put it aside, and let us find a creative way of looking into this issue. And let us move forward on other issues that I think are positive for both of our countries. That would be my position, Mr. President. And Trump says, okay, Enrique. That is fine, and I think it's fair. I do not bring up the wall, but when the press brings up the wall, I will say, let us see how it is going. Let us see how it is working out with Mexico. Because from an economic issue, it is the least important thing we were talking about, but psychologically, it means something. So let's just say, we will work it out. So think about it. Think back to the last few times you've heard him talk about the wall. He says it'll all come out in the wash. It'll all be paid for. And you'll notice in the appropriations bill that just went through the House of Representatives, They put $1.6 million or $1 billion, that with a B, in that budget. The House Republicans and some so-called Democrats, we'll get to them with Howie Klein in a little bit, approved $1.6 billion. Right. So when he says, you know, we'll handle it, it'll be taken care of, it'll come out in the wash. Doesn't it make you wonder what he means when he says this?
We'll handle North Korea. We're going to be able to handle it. It will be handled. We handle everything. Thank you very much.
Ay, ay, ay. Ah, yeah. So that's the latest. A couple of other things from the phone call with Peña Nieto. Now, that's not the call that Trump alleges just happened in the last week or so. Then he backed off and said, well, no. Actually, Sarah Huckabee Sanders says it when asked about it in yesterday's briefing.
Why did the president say that he received a phone call from the leader of the Boy Scouts and the president of Mexico when he did not? Did he lie?
No, on Mexico, he was referencing the conversation that they had at the G20 summit where they specifically talked about the issues that he referenced. In terms of the Boy Scouts, multiple members of the Boy Scout leadership following his speech there that day, congratulated him, praised him, and offered quite powerful compliments following his speech, and those were what those references were about.
The president specifically said that he received a phone call from the president of Mexico.
Yep. They were direct conversations, not actual phone calls.
They were direct conversations, not phone calls. And so she thinks you shouldn't question anymore because, all right, so they weren't phone calls. They were in-person conversations, although representatives from Mexico said they didn't have that conversation at the G20. Yesterday's press briefing was the same contentious one where Stephen Miller was there talking about this horrific new immigration bill that Trump introduced along with, with two Republican senators. We'll get to it in What's News. But the one last thing that I want to get to before we go to What's News and then to Howie Klein is the dog whistle. So Trump is touting this new anti-immigration bill that would cut legal immigration by 50% over the next 10 years, legal immigration, and would limit those who can immigrate to the U.S. to highly skilled workers and people who already speak English. You know, just the restrictions being put on it, which in and of itself are bad enough. But I saw a report last night that students coming home from colleges, getting on a bus, mostly up north, this was happening, are being stopped by ICE agents asking to see their papers, please, basically wanting to know that they are indeed citizens. They're asking about their citizenship. Stephen Miller, who is a senior White House advisor, got up at the briefing yesterday to talk about this proposed immigration bill, which all indications say does not have the support to go anywhere. Stephen Miller got into it with CNN's Jim Acosta over the Statue of Liberty and the poem that's inscribed on the pedestal. And I just want to share the poem with you. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor the Twin Cities frame. Keep ancient lands your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. That poem is called The New Colossus. It's by Emma Lazarus. And Stephen Miller was right. It wasn't on the original statue. That poem was actually written as a way to raise funds for the pedestal, which the statue was a gift from France, but the United States had to raise funds for the pedestal on which she stands in New York Harbor. And so the poem was commissioned. Now, the original intent of the Statue of Liberty was about abolition, about the end of slavery. But by the time the statue got here and they were, commissioning this, we were in this mass immigration influx with like 23 million people coming into the United States in a matter of, a 10, 20 year period. Let me play a little bit. I know this isn't what's news, but bear with me. This is a little back and forth between CNN's Jim Acosta and Stephen Miller at the White House press briefing yesterday.
What the president is proposing here does not sound like it's in keeping with...
Uh-oh. It doesn't want to play.
What the president is proposing here does not sound like it's in keeping with American tradition when it comes to immigration. The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. It doesn't say anything about speaking English or being able to be a computer programmer. Aren't you trying to change what it means to be an immigrant coming into this country if you're telling them you have to speak English? Can't people learn how to speak English when they get here?
Well, first of all, right now, it's a requirement that to be naturalized, you had to speak English. So the notion that speaking English wouldn't be a part of our immigration systems would be actually very ahistorical. Secondly, I don't want to get off into a whole thing about history here, but the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of liberty enlightening the world. It's a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty, but more fundamentally...
Yeah.
The history, but more fundamentally, the history.
You're saying that does not represent.
I'm saying that. I'm saying that the notion. I'm saying the notion that the. I'm saying the notion.
I'm sorry.
No, here, Jim. Let me ask you a question.
That sounds like some National Park revisionism.
Yes,
no, what I'm asking you is
the Statue of Liberty has always been a beacon of hope to the world for people to send.
Jim, do you believe
to this country?
Jim,
and they're not always going to speak English, Stephen.
Jim, do you believe
they're not always going to be highly skilled? They're not always
Jim, I appreciate your speech. Jim, I appreciate your speech.
So while you and I might have been horrified by that exchange, apparently the white nationalists on Twitter celebrated it. This is a popular theme among the alt-right, among those people. David Duke, a vocal Trump supporter and former Imperial Wizard of the KKK, devoted an entire chapter in one of his books to Emma Lazarus and the Statue of Liberty. Duke says Lazarus was, quote, anxious to turn America into a refuge for the cast-offs of the world. Then there's a website called Stormfront, which is, popular among white supremacists, that boasts the tagline, every month is White History Month. They apparently have numerous threads on the topic, including one titled, Give Me Your Huddled Masses, the Jewess Who Tried to Destroy the U.S., I kid you not. This is from Think Progress. Contributors to the forum wrote that the poem should be considered graffiti, and they stressed that Lazarus' sonnet is not part of the original statue at all. The subreddit for Donald Trump supporters, which frequently pushes white nationalist memes, also has a post titled, Does Everyone Realize That the Poem Inscribed Beneath the Statue of Liberty Is Not, In Fact, Law? It's really stunning. By the way, it was 23.5 million people who immigrated to the U.S. between 1880 and 1920. From Time magazine, it was as a result of the need to fund that pedestal that Emma Lazarus was tapped to write The New Colossus for a fundraiser in 1883. Inspired by her work with Russian Jews detained by immigration officials on Ward Island, she included a new facet of liberty in her interpretation of what the statue could mean. Word about the poem got out. It was reprinted in newspapers, the New York Times and others. It became even more popular more than a decade after she died in 1887, when a friend of hers, Georgina Schuyler, happened upon a copy of the poem in 1901 and brought new attention to it. She started a campaign to raise awareness of the timeliness of the poem, and the text was added to Lady Liberty's pedestal 2 years later as the wave of immigration continued. In the years since, though the statue would take on many additional layers of meaning, the link between it and immigration would solidify, with many recognizing that even if La Boulay had something else in mind, Lady Liberty and Emma Lazarus were important parts of the history of immigration in the U.S. And when LBJ signed the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, it was in a ceremony on Liberty Island. It's really quite sad that today we've got these white supremacists, the same people who are fighting for affirmative action, you know, that white people are being discriminated against at colleges and university. This is where Trump has brought us. It's a sad time in American history. Sad time in the Democratic Party, too. And we'll talk about that with Howie Klein in just a few minutes. We'll first take a break, get rid of what's news, and come back with Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and the Blue America PAC next.
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Both CNN and MSNBC took the president to task on Wednesday over the credibility crisis in the White House.
Donald Trump for years has had a casual relationship with the truth, but he's president now. Is basic truth telling too much to ask?
If they're going to potentially mislead us about everything from crowd sizes to campaign meetings to what was said at the Boy Scouts, throw out wildly unsubstantiated claims like Obama wiretapped my phones and 3 million illegal immigrants voted only for Hillary Clinton, and then blast reporters for so-called fake news when they're called out on this nonsense, why should we or the public or Congress or the world take them at their word at anything?
When asked about two instances of the president being less than factually accurate in the last day, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders bristled at the word lie.
Why did the president say that he received a phone call from the leader of the Boy Scouts and the president of Mexico when he did not? Did he lie?
No, on Mexico, he was referencing the conversation that they had had at the G20 summit where they specifically talked about the issues that he referenced. In terms of the Boy Scouts, multiple members of the Boy Scout leadership following his speech there that day congratulated him, praised him, and offered quite powerful compliments following his speech, and those were what those references were about.
The president specifically said that he received a phone call from the president of Mexico.
They were actually direct conversations, not actual phone calls.
So he lied. He didn't receive.
I wouldn't say it was a lie. That's pretty bold accusation.
But things got really heated in the briefing room Wednesday when White House senior advisor Stephen Miller was at the podium to answer questions about the new plan rolled out by Trump and Senators Tom Cotton and David Perdue, which would slash legal immigration to the U.S. in half within a decade. The policy would favor immigrants with advanced skills, education, and mastery of the English language. The New York Times' Glenn Thrush asked for specific studies and statistics to support the idea that American workers lose jobs to immigrant workers.
Let's also use common sense here, folks. Why do special interests want to bring in more low-skill workers? And why historically...
Yeah, I'm not asking for common sense. I'm asking for specific...
Well, I think it's very clear, Glenn, that you're not asking for common sense. But if I could just answer... If I could just answer your question, I named the studies, Glenn. Glenn. I named the studies. I named the studies.
I asked you for a statistic. Can you tell me
We'll make a carve-out in the bill that says the New York Times can hire all the low-skilled, less-paid workers they want from other countries and see how you feel then about low-wage substitution. This is a reality that's happening in our country. Maybe it's time we had compassion, Glenn, for American workers. President Trump has met with American workers who've been replaced by foreign workers and asked them how this has affected their lives.
And it was Jim Acosta of CNN's turn. He cited a line from the Emma Lazarus poem, The New Colossus, that's engraved on the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty.
The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free. Doesn't say anything about speaking English or being able to be a computer programmer. Aren't you trying to change what it means to be an immigrant coming into this country, if you're telling them you have to speak English? Can't people learn how to speak English when they get
here? I don't want to get off into a whole thing about history here, but the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty, but more fundamentally,
you're saying
the
that
history. I'm saying the notion.
I'm sorry.
No, here,
like,
Jim, let me ask you a question.
That sounds like some national park revisionism.
No, the what I'm asking you is...
The Statue of Liberty
Jim,
has always
Jim,
been
let me ask you a question.
Of hope to the world
Jim,
for people to send
Jim, do you believe,
people to this country.
Jim,
and they're not always going to speak
Jim,
English, Stephen.
Jim,
they're not
do you
always
believe,
going to be highly skilled. They're not always
Jim,
going to be...
Jim, Jim, I appreciate
Despite
your speech...
Despite the frequent dog whistles by white nationalists about the poem, history tells us that Emma Lazarus wrote the New Colossus to help raise money to build the base for the Statue of Liberty in 1883. The inscription on a bronze plaque was added in 1903. But the exchange in the briefing room went downhill from there.
So,
but this whole notion of they have to learn English before they get to the United States, are we just going to bring in people from Great Britain and Australia?
Jim, actually, I have to honestly say, I am shocked at your statement that you think that only people from Great Britain and Australia would know English. It's actually, it reveals your cosmopolitan bias to a shocking degree that in your mind, no, this is an amazing moment. That you think only people from Great Britain or Australia would speak English is so insulting to millions of hardworking immigrants who do speak English from all over the world. Jim, have you honestly never met an immigrant from another country who speaks English outside of Great Britain and Australia? Is that your personal experience?
Of course there are people who come.
But that's not what you said. And it shows your cosmopolitan bias. And I just want to say...
sounds like you're trying to engineer the racial and ethnic flow of people into this country.
Jim, that is one of the most outrageous, insulting, ignorant, and foolish things you've ever said.
The president quietly signed the Russia sanctions legislation into law on Wednesday, taking a shot at Congress for giving him no choice in the matter with both a signing statement and a second personal statement that ended with the paragraph, quote, "I built a truly great company worth many billions of dollars. This is a big part of the reason I was elected. As president, I can make far better deals with foreign countries than Congress." All righty, then. And that's a bit of What's News for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. Catch the Nicole Sandler Show Tuesdays through Fridays from 3 to 4 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well, then... just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories, and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Howie Klein, also from the Blue America Pack. Hello, Howie.
Hey, how are you, Nicole?
I'm doing well, and you?
Good, too. Just having a really good day, although I just ran across a statistic that shocked me.
Uh-oh.
What percentage of Americans do you think have never heard of Robert Mueller?
Oh, wow. I would say 55.
You're very close. I would have never have guessed that. It's 52%.
Wow. Yeah.
But that just comes as a shock to me. I mean, it's all over... well, what is it all over? It's all over MSNBC.
Right, it's all over the news, probably not Fox. And see, that's the problem. People who watch Fox are in such a bubble that they don't hear the stories that we hear, you know, paying attention to the rest of the media. And as much as I've ragged on the mainstream corporate media in recent years, these days they're earning their paychecks, I think, because there's so much to cover.
But that's not 48% of the people. What percent of the people watch Fox? I think it's not very many.
I don't know. And then, you know, that then there are all those people who just don't pay attention to the news. I hate to say it. I have a sister like that.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think most people just don't pay attention to the news. I mean, 52%, I mean, don't know what, I mean, people are talking that I know about will Trump be impeached if Mueller is fired?
Right.
Well, how is he going to be impeached if people don't even know who Mueller is? And when Trump fires him, people just shrug their shoulders.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. I think we live in a nation of uninformed people. And when you take the 48% and say half of them are just uninformed and half of them are in the Fox bubble, and then therein lies the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd. I mean, people, I don't know, 47% of the people never heard of Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch. Maybe if said the Mooch, the poll would have found more people, but under the name Anthony Scaramucci, 48% of the people didn't know who Rince Priebus was.
I'm not surprised. Most people don't live and breathe the news and politics the way we do. I don't think it's healthy. And I was saying earlier, I mean, when I'm not sitting in here doing my show, I'm scouring, you know, the internet or TV looking for actual news, because there's always something going on these days. There's so much. And I'm trying to at least get a decent grasp of what's happening, so I know what's going on, so I can speak with a somewhat informed voice. Most people don't. They just want to go about their lives. I remember being, I have a sister, and I was at her house one night, and she had some bad reality TV show on. And I said, well, can I turn on the news? She said, no, I don't want to watch that. So, you know, I think a lot of people just want to live their lives and they don't want to be bothered by it, which is one of the reasons we're in the mess we're in.
Yeah, well, absolutely the case. I agree.
So, in fact, a lot of people did not know that the Democrats, the official party line, I think it's of the DCCC, is that now all of a sudden there's no litmus test on a woman's right to choose. Is this something new?
Well, it's new that they're admitting it out loud. What a lot of people have missed is that the DCCC has been recruiting and financing blue dogs and anti-choice Democrats for a very long time. But they never talk about it. They always keep it secret. So now, Lujan, Ben-Ray Lujan, is not a real bright guy, and he has just came out and said it in a couple of interviews. So now there's some real anger, and the anger has spread from just grassroots type people who were pissed off as soon as that came out. I mean, you can imagine, you know, organizations like NARAL, you know, just flipping out over that. But now it's spread. I mean, yesterday I read a tweet from Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York, who was, you know, clearly really angry. I've been talking to members of Congress and to candidates about it, and a lot of them don't want to go on the record. I did a couple of posts where people did go on the record. You know, you've got, you know, there's always people who will stand up, even members of Congress will stand up, like Mark Pocan, like Ro Khanna, you know, and denounce it. But most members of Congress just shake their head and, you know, will say off the record that they, you know, that they hate Pelosi and that they hate Lujan and they should both leave the DCCC alone.
Wow.
And stop this stuff. But, you know, they are so divisive now. These two guys, I mean, one of them is a guy, one of them is a woman, have made themselves so hated. And what they're doing is so divisive to the Democratic Party that they've got to go. I mean, Pelosi should not be leader of this party any longer, and Lujan has, well, Lujan is unfit to be head of the DCCC anyway. He's proven himself utterly incompetent for a couple of years, and was a disastrous DCCC last cycle, and he has every intention of being a disastrous DCCC chairman this cycle. The only strategy they have is Trump is bad, and if we just close our eyes and hold our breath, November 2018 will come around and people will vote against Trump and we'll win. That's it. That's his strategy. There's nothing else.
And in the meantime, they're recruiting, as you say, blue dogs and new Dems and anti-choice candidates. And as if that's okay, you know, give us Republican light because they think that Democrats and progressives will vote that way instead of staying home.
Well, the sad thing is history shows that they're right, that that real Democrats, even progressives, will do that. They will vote for Democrats that the DCCC pushes on them. And then what will happen is they'll, in the next midterm, after this midterm.
That's so when they stay home. That'll be a presidential year. Oh, the next midterm. Okay.
The next midterm. They will have realized that they were tricked. And what they'll do the same thing they did in 2010, which was the next midterm after the 2006 anti-Republican tsunami when Rahm Emanuel got all these blue dogs, new Dems, and anti-choice candidates in. And then in 2010, the Democrats stayed home. They didn't come and vote. And they lost 63 seats, more seats than they won in 2006 and 2018 combined. I'm sorry, 2006 and 2008 combined. This is what's going to happen this time. In 2018 and 2020, the Democrats are likely to have two good years. And then in 2022, they'll lose everything because Democratic voters will again say, who is this person? Why are they voting against choice? Why are they voting with the Republicans on all these right-wing agenda items? What did we do here? And they won't come out to vote in the midterms, and the Democrats will lose all those seats again. So, I mean, literally, they have asked Rahm Emanuel to consult for them.
Seriously.
DCCC has asked Rahm Emanuel to consult for them again. And this is what he's telling them to do, and they're doing it.
Oh,
and
my God.
And when the DCCC is backing a candidate, I would say the chances are something between 70 and 80% that the candidate is either an ex-Republican, a blue dog, a new Dem, some kind of anti-choice monster, or some sort of a conservative that isn't taking on the label. You know, a lot of people are too savvy, especially in blue areas, to take on the onus of running as a blue dog openly or running as a new Dem openly. What happens is they get elected and they immediately join those caucuses, but they don't tell the voters that in advance. So if the DCCC is supporting somebody, there's a very, very small chance it's a real Democrat. Very, very small. You know, 20, 25, maybe 30%, but that's it.
Has the DCCC weighed in yet on Randy Brice?
No.
Of course not, because he's making noise. He's probably, who we've spoken about, he's running against Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, Iron Stash on Twitter. He's raising a lot of money, getting a lot of notice, and the DCCC is ignoring him. You know, Howie Klein, this is a good time for those who may not know you, then to reintroduce you again as not only the guy who blogs at downwithtyranny.com, but as the guy behind the Blue America PAC, along with Digby from Digby's blog and John Amato of Crooks and Liars. Blue America has been, how long has Blue America been around now? Long time.
2005 is when we started.
Wow. So, the goal is to find, identify, and then help raise money for the best progressive candidates. And you do have a litmus test. When you vet candidates, in fact, last week you said after we spoke, you were going to go start talk to a bunch of candidates, and hopefully you found some good ones. Because while the DCCC may be looking for candidates that don't meet our criteria, I know if Blue America endorses a candidate, then it's a real progressive that I know I can openly support happily and tell others about. So what is the criteria?
Well, there are a lot of criteria. So it's not just one thing. So when we first started, we had, just like everybody else, we had a questionnaire that we would ask candidates. And then, you know, we realized pretty quickly that candidates would tell us whatever they thought we wanted to hear. So usually these people are savvy enough to figure out what the answers to the questions are and then just regurgitate those answers. So we learned the hard way that you can't do it that way, that those questionnaires don't work. So instead, what I try to do is get to know the candidates. So sometimes I'll be talking to a candidate for a month or so, and they'll say, well, when are you going to give me your questionnaire? And I say, what do you think we've been doing for the last month? And they're always shocked. I mean, often I'll ask them to write a guest post for Down with Tyranny. Some of them do, some of them don't want to. It doesn't matter if they don't want to. There's other ways to do this. But basically, I don't say to them, do you support Medicare for all? That's not one of the questions I ask them. I wait for them to tell me they support Medicare for all, and I want to see it on their websites. That's one of the giveaways. When someone is a DCCC candidate, the DCCC tells them specifically, do not put up anything that has to do with contentious issues. So wow. If you see someone says on their website that they're in favor and will back Medicare for all, chances are they're not a DCCC candidate. The DCCC doesn't want that in their candidates. Now they're telling the DCCC and the DCCC related consultants who they put into campaigns are telling their candidates, well, you know, if you're in a blue district and they're bothering you and all these damn hippies and grassroots activists are, saying that they demand that you be for Medicare for all, just nod your head in agreement.
Wow.
It doesn't matter anyway. So you know, you've got to get to know somebody as well as you can. I mean, I literally sit and talk with these candidates in person as much as I can. I mean, I've been lucky that people are willing to come to Los Angeles, and when they do, I often meet them. As you probably know, I just spent a lot of time with Randy Bryce. We had already endorsed him, but he was in L.A., and we got to spend a lot of time together. When you're spending actual time with a person, you see how they react. You see how they act in situations, and that gives you a fuller understanding of who they are and what you can expect once they get into office. So, obviously, the things that we're most interested in at Blue America are we want candidates who believe in equality of opportunity, regardless of things like race, gender, mm-hmm. or religion, ethnicity, any of that stuff. We don't want bigots. You don't even get to the other questions if you say that you're, for example, pro-choice. If you're pro-choice, we don't even ask you the eventual questions that come. But eventually, what we want to talk with people about
if you say you're pro-life.
I meant anti-choice.
Right,
yeah,
anti-choice.
Pro-life. So thank you. So eventually, we want to know what candidates plan to do to stop global warming.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, and it's, so it's not a yes or no, check a box kind of question. I want to hear what they have to say about that. I want to hear what they have to say about economic inequality and what they're going to do about Wall Street bankers, how they're going to handle that. You know, I don't know if you heard this or not, but I was driving yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I listened. I was listening to All Things Considered on NPR, and they had an amazing program about the latest ripoff from Wells Fargo.
Hmm.
So Wells Fargo cheated something between 500,000 and 600,000 of their customers out of millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
And when they got caught, I mean, the New York Times caught them. First they tried to deny it, and then they finally, they had all the paperwork was there. They couldn't keep denying it. So then they said, okay, well, we'll pay everybody back. And paying everybody back means, they'll decide how much they're going to give each of the people who they ripped off. I mean, they literally ripped off a minimum of 500,000, but probably closer to 600,000 customers. And they were able to do this because the Republicans are, and I shouldn't say just the Republicans, the conservatives, so all of the Republicans and the Republican wing of the Democratic Party, what we've been talking about, the New Dems, particularly the New Dems and the Blue Dogs, want to get rid of all consumer protections. They think that that's a horrible thing for the people who finance their campaigns. So, and you notice the people who are pushing this the hardest, both in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party, are the ones who take the most money from Wall Street. So, you get someone like Kyrsten Sinema, you get someone like Jim Himes, you get someone like Joe Crowley among Democrats, and then basically all the Republicans, any Republican with power. I noticed today, as a matter of fact, that Ryan had finally gone over the $10 million mark of the legalistic bribes that he takes from Wall Street. Just shot over $10 million.
Wow.
He's at 10.3 now. He'll catch up to Chuck Schumer one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, you find that these people want to get rid of consumer protections, and that's a very, very big deal. And I want to know from the people who we're considering endorsing what they think about it and what they plan to do about it. You know, I want to hear I want to hear from them what I hear from people like Ted Lieu and Ro Khanna,
right,
who are really making an effort to go after it. I want to hear from them where they stand on the work that people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are doing to enhance consumer protection and protect the protection from the Republicans and the other conservatives.
Right.
So when we talk about a litmus test, that really is the Blue America litmus test, but there are no boxes that you can
right.
check off that your consultant can tell you to do. One of the questions I love asking, you know, just casually, I love asking the candidates is there anyone in Congress who you really admire and look forward to working with when you get there?
Oh, that's,
I mean, that's
a good
an open-ended
one, right?
question. They can
yep.
say anything they want, and I just want to hear what they have to say. There's no right or wrong answer. Well, there is a wrong answer. I'll tell you that in a minute. But, you know, I want to hear them say, and they often do. They'll often say Bernie. They'll say Elizabeth Warren. They'll say Ted Lieu. That's the kind of stuff I love hearing
sure.
from people, and I ask them why, and I want to hear good answers why. But the other day, I think I might have told you about this when it happened, I asked a candidate, and he said, Jim Costa. So Jim Costa is one of the worst members of Congress. He's a blue dog from California. He votes with the progressives, maybe 20-30% of the time, and the rest of the time he votes with the Republicans. So you know, although the Democratic Party has let them put a D next to his name, when he needs money, and he did because he almost lost his seat, they'll pump millions of dollars into his campaign. But he votes with the Republicans, and he votes with them on all their issues. And yet here's a candidate being interviewed by me about, I mean, he requested an endorsement,
mm-hmm.
and he must know that we're on the phone talking about whether or not
right.
he's going to get that endorsement. And he's telling me that the candidate he wants to work with most is Jim Costa.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't just that we decided to reject him. It was also because he didn't know what Medicare for All was. He had no idea what single payer was.
Uh-huh.
He literally didn't know what it was.
Wow.
Couldn't have an opinion because he didn't know what it was. And he said to me, this was voluntarily, he said, and I like when they volunteer what their big issues are. He said to me, let's talk about the things that have motivated me to run for Congress. I said, awesome. What are they? And he said, there are really just two issues that are making me run. One is the need for more protection for the Second Amendment.
Huh.
And the other is more use of the death penalty.
Oh, my God. And why did he come to you? Obviously, he's not good at doing homework.
Yeah. I mean, why is he a Democrat?
Yeah, good question. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at downwithtyranny.com, and you do have a guest post from a guy named Stephen Jaffe, who is primarying Nancy Pelosi. And before the guest post, you wrote, he's running on Medicare for All, fair taxation, a cost of living adjusted $15 living wage, strengthening Roe v. Wade, reforming immigration policy, guaranteeing LGBTQIA rights, public financing of political campaigns, the abolition of private prisons, guaranteeing net neutrality, and a pretty comprehensive Bernie-crat type of program. That's kind of what we want to hear.
I mean, that stuff I got off his website. I
uh-huh.
mean, he had it there. When you turn to a DCCC candidate, and you'll never see positions like that on their website.
Mm-hmm.
They don't put them. They're hiding their positions. So I was very impressed that this guy had, you know, right up front, the first thing you see when you go to his website is, you know, my issues, my positions. And he tells you where he's at, and if you want to vote for him, you know why you're voting for him.
Awesome.
No guess.
So this guy looks pretty good. So is this an official endorsement of Stephen Jaffe running against Nancy?
No, no.
No?
We're just getting started. It's,
okay.
It's not an official endorsement at all.
Gotcha.
I think I've had maybe two conversations with the guy, and this is the very beginning of a process.
Good. So I wanted people to hear that it is a process. And so if a candidate gets a Blue America endorsement, then they are the real deal. Because we do spend a lot of time tearing down, you know, people in the Democratic Party, but for good reason, because these are not the people who should be running the party. So I promised someone in the chat room I would ask, because there's been a lot of noise about Kamala Harris lately. And I'm hearing, you know, there I hear both sides on her. What's the story on Kamala Harris?
So look, I don't want to come out saying that Kamala Harris is bad. Mm-hmm. That's not the point.
Right.
But the point is, the whole reason that all this chatter is going on now is because it's like a trial balloon if whether or not she should run for president.
Right.
She's an unaccomplished politician
new, right.
who's about herself. She may turn out to be good. I would bet mm-hmm. she won't, but she could. I'm totally open-minded to the fact that she may turn out to be excellent. I live in California, and she didn't prove herself enough to me for me to even have voted for her.
Oh, wow.
I didn't vote primary. I didn't vote for her in the general election. Did not vote for Kamala Harris. I'm open to it. I'm waiting to hear. I'm waiting to see her do something that is worthy of my vote.
Right.
Let alone worthy of me supporting her to be president of the United States. Who the hell is she? What has she done? She was a very, very bad attorney general. Hmm. She's not a skilled politician. Every person who ran the first time she ran for attorney general, every person who ran did better. Every Democrat who ran did better than her. Her race, in fact, had to be recounted because it was so close. She nearly lost to a Republican. Ooh. She isn't very good.
Wow.
And then her voting record is excellent. She has a really, really good voting. And you know how good her voting record is? It's not as good as Elizabeth Warren, but it's fractionally better than Bernie's voting record.
Wow.
I mean, they're both amazing. I mean, she votes. She knows how to vote.
Good.
She votes with
okay.
the Democratic Party.
Well, that's good.
But yeah, it is. It's very good. It is good.
But she's not
and
ready to be
she's
president. She's
worth watching,
right.
but to be a president
exactly.
of the United States.
Yeah, look what happens when we elect inexperienced people who aren't ready. We get a Donald Trump, or sorry, but I offend people when I say it. But a Barack Obama, he wasn't ready to be
yeah.
president either.
Right, but Obama was far readier than her. So I agree with what you're saying in general, but Obama was far more accomplished than
mm-hmm.
her and had shown he was more accomplished than her. I didn't feel that he was necessarily the very, very best choice, but he turned out to be a decent enough president. I don't think he turned out to be a great president, but he turned out to be an okay president.
Well, and when you compare him to what we have now.
The first time, I admit it.
I did. I voted for him both times because I voted against the other one, but I didn't in the primary. I voted for John Edwards, so you know, it just shows where I am. So Howie
yeah,
Klein.
Well, guess what? I did the same thing.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we've got like like a minute and a half left. Who's somebody that are there any new endorsees? Somebody that you've met recently that we need to watch out for?
Yeah, this week I have spent the entire week on the phone talking with candidates. So there are lots and lots and lots of new ones who are really good. We're trying to make up our mind. We're in the last phases of Texas 7, which is a Houston district that looks like it's very flippable. The incumbent is just a rubber stamp Republican named John Culberson, and there are some really bad candidates in there that the Democrats have. And then there are some really good. There's more than one really good candidate, and that's where the problem comes in. But there's a guy named Jason Weston, who's a real standout guy. He's an oncologist, my own oncologist, who I credit with saving my life. Keeps saying to me, "Jason is so great. Why don't you endorse Jason?"
Well, it's hard to fight against that. All right, we'll keep an eye out.
She does research. She does research. They're both award-winning researchers, and they work together. And she keeps asking me, you know, what does it take? Why is it taking so long? Why aren't you helping him? He needs the help. We need him in Congress. She's so great. I mean, I love her so much. She's not necessarily a political person, but she, you know, really believes in this guy. And,
right.
and that, you know, hey, that counts.
Yes, it does. Howie Klein, downwithtyranny.com and the Blue America PAC. I will put links to both on the blog today. So if you want to endorse with your dollars some of these Blue America candidates, that's the way you can support them. Thank you so much, as always, Howie.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, so there's a little bit of what that's about. Now you know, Blue America. All right, we are out of time. Tomorrow, How Do I Explain This to My Kids? A new book, Parenting in the Age of Trump. Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad mine's not so little anymore, but it scares me that she's a young adult growing up in this. All right, thank you for listening. If you can, we need your support. NicoleSandler.com/donate is where you can help us. I need your help to be able to keep doing this. Thank you for those who pitched in the other day. All right, one more day to this week. We'll see what news breaks tonight. Thanks for listening, everyone.
It's Thursday, August 3rd, 2017.
2,000 acres home to more than 400 bird and plant species could soon see a border wall cut through the northern side of the refuge.
DHS waives environmental laws, prepares to bulldoze wildlife refuge for Trump's border wall. Court of Appeals orders EPA to enforce methane regulations. Now, Great Britain to phase out all diesel and gasoline cars. Plus,
The next buy I do is my next car, which will be an electric vehicle.
Shell Oil CEO says his next car will be electric.
Really?
Yes.
Cool. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Looking at you, two things are clear. Heaven is missing an angel.
Well, thank you, Al Gore.
And the U.S. is missing any kind of viable, responsible climate policy.
Oh. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you and I are becoming a bit of a broken record here this summer, but more record heat waves across the U.S. and now up in the Northwest.
Yes, Oregon is going to hit a record 103 degrees or so in the next couple of days. This is dangerous heat levels.
In Oregon.
Yeah, I know. And that's very dangerous because not that many people have air conditioning up there.
Yeesh, every part of the country this summer. What else you got for us today to cheer us up?
Well, some good news. A federal court has ordered Trump's Environmental Protection Agency to enforce new methane regulations.
That is good news.
I know. Ruling that a temporary delay imposed by EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt was illegal. That means drillers must now fix and repair leaks of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, while Administrator Pruitt works to roll back the regulations for a full 2 years in the meantime. That's even though the EPA admits itself that doing so will damage nearby residents' health. 16 state attorneys general sued the EPA this week after Administrator Pruitt blocked the implementation of an EPA rule reducing ground-level ozone pollution, a main ingredient in toxic smog, which is also a significant danger to public health. At this rate, Pruitt's EPA itself is a danger to public
health.
Yeah,
no kidding.
The Trump administration Department of Homeland Security announced on Tuesday that it will waive numerous major environmental laws in order to expedite construction of a section of Trump's controversial border wall near San Diego, California. DHS will use existing authority under a 2005 immigration law that exempts the agency from 37 major laws like the National Environmental Policy Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the Clean Water Act. Mm. In Texas, the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol confirms that it is preparing to construct a segment of the border wall through the heart of the crucial Santa Ana Bird and Wildlife Refuge. That's in part because it's already federal land and therefore is the easiest place to jumpstart construction. Refuge officials say the wall will destroy the refuge.
Well, the good thing about walls is that even if they go up, they can and they will eventually come down.
Good point. The Trump administration's decision to strip grizzly bears in and around Yellowstone National Park of their endangered species protections has already gone into effect on Monday, but now 9 Native American tribes, including the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, are suing in court to restore those protections under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Mm, something the Trump administration used to pretend to care about.
Exactly. Good news, though, for endangered American wolves. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has now overturned overturned a U.S. Fish and Wildlife decision to delist the gray wolf under the Endangered Species Act back in 2011. That removed endangered species protections for the gray wolf in 9 states, from Minnesota to Ohio.
So gray wolves are protected again.
Yes.
For now.
For now. Some more good news. Britain will phase out gas and diesel cars by 2040 to reduce toxic air pollution and cut emissions. This occurs just 2 weeks after France announced a similar phase out. The British government will also devote more than $3 billion to clean air initiatives and a national electric vehicle charging network. The government of Queensland, Australia, this week announced that it will build the world's longest electric vehicle highway to date, more than 2,000 miles long, and said that it should be complete within a year. And here in the U.S., the Los Angeles Public Transit Authority, the L.A. Metro, has announced it will replace its entire bus fleet with all electric buses by 2030 to cut air pollution and fuel costs. That's more than 2,000 all-electric buses in 12 years, which prompted electric bus manufacturer Proterra to open a new manufacturing plant in the LA area. All of these big moves away from fossil fuels have prompted the CEO of Shell Oil, Ben Van Beurden, to tell Bloomberg News this week his next car will be electric.
The next buy I do is my next car, which will be an electric vehicle. I think the whole move to electrify the economy, electrify mobility in places like Northwest Europe, in the US, even in China, is a good thing. I mean, we need to be at a much higher degree of electric vehicle penetration.
Good for the CEO of Shell Oil.
I know.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Beep, 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 yeah! Beep, 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 yeah!